Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I am excited to welcome you to day three of the 2021 Sabre Virtual Analytics Conference presented by Major League Baseball, Rawlings, Sports Info Solutions, and SMT. I'm Sabre CEO Scott Bush. We've got a great program for you, and today's programming includes our Analytics Conference Research Awards, as well as research presentations from Meredith Wills, Connor Turner, and Jason Thiemensen. But we begin today with a panel that is being broadcast live on Sabre's Facebook page, featuring analysts from three different teams in Major League Baseball to discuss the varying roles of their jobs, how they reached this point in their career, and what they are looking for when they make hiring decisions. Very excited to hear all three of them share their thoughts. And I'm also excited to welcome back a longtime friend of the conference and ESPN baseball analyst, Eduardo Perez, as our moderator. Eduardo, welcome back, buddy.
Oh, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it. And I really miss you, man. I haven't seen you in over a year. So being in this Sabre is, again, brings back a lot of memories from the days that we spent in Arizona to also the Rawlings Gold Glove Awards, where obviously we know about the Platinum Award and how much Sabre has to do with that.
That's right. And I'm excited for you to welcome on these panelists.
Oh, you got it. And thanks a lot. And thanks for entrusting me with a brilliant group of people that we have here this afternoon for all of us that are in the East Coast. For those of you that are in the West Coast, good morning to you. And rise and shine, because our IQ level is going to go straight up after listening to Scott and myself. This is going to be actually a really interesting one. And the first person that I would love to introduce is, again, a big part of who the Houston Astros are right now. And if you look at your screen, you see Esan Bakari, who is, a big part of the Astros organization when it comes to being director and development of their analytical staff, and also with us, and we'll hear more from him as well. We'll hear from Maggie O'Hara, who is actually from Chicago, but working with the Detroit Tigers, and I'd love to see that part of the analytical area and how they've been working with. And then we have Josh Ruffin, a Duke Blue Devil, as a matter of fact, but now he has been with the Minnesota Twins for the last couple of years. And again, working on not only the part of the analytical part, but also with the scouting, and I'd love to see how those two mesh together. He has a baseball background as well in Duke. So see how those curveballs and those fastballs really work on both sides of the plate and with spin rates and everything. But a little bit more, let's start with us, and so he can give us a little bit of perspective on how and what you do with the Houston Astros to make that organization every day better.
Thank you, Eduardo. It's good to be here. Hope everyone's doing well and safe and healthy. So my career in baseball started with the Dodgers. I was there for four seasons, 2015 to the end of 2018 season. I came on board with the Astros in 2019 season as director of R&D. So led that great team that we have over there for a year. And then I got moved to head up our player evaluation group. So that's going to be our scouting groups. And I spent 2020 doing that, and then have since moved to and currently transitioning to a new role, which is senior director of strategic decision making. So my role there is focused on long-term planning, innovation, education, decision-making for the entire organization.
Outstanding. Maggie, if you can piggyback on that, so we can also introduce in a little bit of your track and how you were able to get to where you are now with the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, yeah, thanks for having me. So I've been with the Tigers now since 2017. I started with them as an intern right out of college. And I think, being with the Tigers, especially when I started with them, it kind of was the beginning of sort of the rebuild with the team. So, my entire time with the analytics department has been kind of with a rebuild, sort of with a new analytics group. And we've really gotten to build up, you know, a full analytics department, you know, from the ground up, which has been, I think, a really cool experience to be able to do. A lot of the work that I do primarily is with our player development sphere. So a lot of kind of taking the analytics and the research that we do and really trying to bring it to our, you know, our minor league players, our coaches, try to really work on, you know, I think maximizing the potential of all of our players once we bring them into the organization. You know, how do we get them to be, you know, part of the championship team, you know, whenever that happens.
Perfect. And Josh, last but not least, Josh, a little bit of your track on how you were able to go from actually the playing ball field in Duke to where you are now with the Minnesota Twins.
First off, thanks for having me here. I was able to play baseball for 4 years at Duke. And, you know, like as everybody who plays for the most part will realize, you know, you kind of want to find your niche in the game beyond the playing field. So I ended up taking an internship with Baseball Info Solutions, actually, coming out of college. And that was like my foray into baseball. I loved it. It was just something I wanted to work in. And so, you know, I really kind of built up those data analyst skills that I had coming out. And I actually had an internship with the Tigers in the 2015 season. And so that was a lot of fun to have that exposure to not just the baseball side, but understanding kind of the whole industry and understanding how to run the organization and different components that are involved. And I did some work actually as a data analyst outside of baseball, but kind of did some research on my own, tried to stay current with the game, and was able to use some of my findings and some of the work that I had done to talk with the Twins before the 2019 season. And they were setting up a new position to actually work with their advanced scouts. So they wanted somebody who had that ability to kind of do both the analytical side, but also be able to talk to the on-field staff and make it digestible and actionable for them. And so I was able to kind of, you know, play the best of both worlds and fill that role for them. So that's what I've been doing for the past couple of years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
You know, what's really interesting is you guys, you know, if I'm a student, I would love to find out, and maybe I can go right back to you, Josh, because you mentioned about the Baseball Info Solutions and everything, but how does the interview process look like for that prospective, you know, student trying to get an internship to get in their foot in the door? How does that work?
It's interesting because I think it's kind of one of those you want to try and find something or some skill set or something that you have that helps you to stand out from the crowd. I think a lot of people come in and they love to say like, hey, I really love baseball. And like, obviously that's super important. But we're kind of trying to bring on people who can kind of help us go into new avenues, explore, you know, new strategies and tactics and data flows that we haven't had before. And so having a skill set that helps you to tackle that is kind of what stands out to us. And, you know, even beyond just being able to do coding or anything, something that makes you unique. I know that for me, the playing experience that I had combined with the ability to do some of the analysis was something where I fit a smaller niche that helped me to stand out in the interview process. But there's other things too. I mean, you don't have to come just from the baseball world. We've seen plenty of experience in other roles that have translated over pretty well.
Okay, Essen, would you want to piggyback on that one also as far as what other advice would you have for the interview process?
Yeah, I think, quantitative skills, I think in general, are becoming more and more important, and it doesn't matter if it's a position in R&D that is, you know, focused on the quantitative skills. I think quantitative skills are going to be important in just about any position that you're going to take in baseball, because it doesn't matter if you're working on the development or with the coaches or in scouting, you're going to need to be able to interpret a lot of the metrics and the data that are now available. But specifically for a quantitative or more technical position, one of the things that we really like to see is some demonstrated work that, you know, shows that you're thinking about the problem, thinking about baseball problems. It doesn't necessarily have to be in baseball. It always helps if it is, but some demonstrated work showing off your skills from, you know, starting from data cleaning all the way to communication of the results. I think that's going to go a long way in selling yourself and selling your skills.
All right, Maggie, let's say you do land that internship. How do you, and again, how were you able to impress? What are the things and advices that you would give the listeners as advice to, okay, this is what I have to do to make this to make this internship special so I can stand out?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I mean, I think so much of it is, you know, when you're an intern in a new organization, I mean, it's hard to explain quite how much, you know, how much data there really is when you're actually, you know, in a major league operations. Like, there's, you know, a ton of stuff that you have that you can only kind of scratch the surface of on the public side of things. And so, you know, I think the thing I'll say that's the most important is just, you know, being willing to learn and being willing to kind of understand, you know, what's going on and how you can help and figure out, right, what your niche is within the operations department. I think, you know, whether it's you have a playing background and that's something that you're really interested in, or whether, you know, you're really interested in advanced scouting, or, you know, maybe it's the draft. I think trying to find ways to, you know, to show that you bring something, you know, a little more unique, or, you know, I think a lot of it is, yeah, just kind of being willing to also do some of the less fun projects. I think, you know, as an intern, there's never a lack of, some projects that, you know, there's always another project to do, and being willing to kind of, yeah, take up the, you know, mapping players and, you know, doing those kind of things with a smile on your face because you're excited to, you know, be working in baseball. I think that's always been really important to us. And then, yeah, I think you learn so much when you're in baseball operations department, and just being able to, you know, listen and ask questions. And I think that really goes a long way.
Yeah. Besides being present, you know, and obviously the listening part and everything, what are, for example, and I'll go to you, Josh, what's that one thing, that aha moment that you're like, okay, I've got something here that I really enjoy, that I feel that they also, if it's my supervisors also enjoy seeing me do the work that made you stand out. Do you have any examples of that you're like, okay, this is something that'll help me continue my progress to maybe get to an organization?
Definitely. I think one thing, and Maggie hit on it, is the fact that, you know, usually if you're in an internship position, you're going to be kind of tackling some of the more tedious roles. And that's fine. And it's good that you can do that. But I think it's really important to try and sit there and understand that, like, you know, you want to maximize the time that you have there in that environment. So kind of going above and beyond, and asking questions and just trying to involve yourself. I mean, not necessarily being nosy, obviously, but, you know, sitting there and just trying to, like, show that you're trying to learn is one of those things. I think one was helpful for me was just kind of really getting involved in a lot of the arbitration stuff that we have, but then also trying to do a lot with just kind of ask on the trade process, not necessarily asking, you know, who are we going to trade for, you know, who, whatever, but kind of just like, hey, how do you value relievers? How do we value, you know, an outfielder that's got this or that? Like, just going in and asking those questions to show that you're trying to learn, and also show that you're thinking, and you're thinking along the same lines as the guys who are higher up. I think it's a big helpful skill to practice when you're in those environments and you have that, you know, access that you don't normally have.
Awesome. And you know, everybody has that person that they lean on, that mentor that they lean on for advice. Have you had such a person during your trek to where you are with the Houston Astros?
Yeah, I've been, you know, in baseball for, this will be my seventh season, and, you know, Dodgers, Astros, both successful during my times there. But strangely enough, I've worked with six current or former general managers during that time. So Farhan Zaidi, Josh Burns, Jeff Luhnow, James Click, Andrew Friedman, and Alex Anthopoulos. So I've had a chance to really learn from a lot of great people, you know, beyond them too, as well. I think the two people that really stand out as mentors would be Josh Burns and Doug Fearing. Doug Fearing was my supervisor in R&D at the Dodgers. Those are two people that really helped shape a lot of what I know and believe now in the game. And I would equate them to, you know, some of the academic mentors that I had. I mean, they were fantastic people and fantastic teachers.
Wow. That's six current general managers. I mean, I played 13 years in the big leagues. I don't think I had six general managers that I played under. So that's really impressive right there. Maggie, how about you? Same question as far as mentorship. Have you had anybody as a mentor?
Yeah, Yeah, I'll say, I think, you know, when I was first looking at getting into baseball, you know, Sean Ahmed, who was working for the Cubs at the time and now is a senior analyst with the Pirates, I think was, you know, my mentor in terms of he went to University of Chicago as well. And I think was the first person that kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, I think when I was still in college, the idea of, you know, being in a baseball operations department, it felt like you kind of had to, you know, go work in finance or something. And then, you know, later on in your career, you could move over into the analytics sphere. And, you know, he was the first person that kind of made me realize like, oh no, yeah, now there are internships with teams and there are ways to, you know, get in, you know, just have a career in baseball analytics from the start. And so he was sort of the first person to open my eyes to that and kind of, you know, helped me kind of, you know, navigate the interview processes with teams. And I think it's just always been, I think it's one of those things where it's made me realize like, it's so, even doing things like this, like it's so nice to know other people with other teams as much as, you know, I love everyone at the Tigers for sure and have, you know, wonderful mentors and, you know, my bosses there. I think having relationships with people, you know, at other clubs is really helpful in terms of just, you know, bouncing some ideas off each other and understanding like, you know, as much as it can, you can feel a little bit on an island in one place, like, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, within the game. And I think especially, you know, I feel that way, especially being a woman and working for an analyst firm, being one of the few ones, knowing like that there are other women working for other teams has been, I think, really helpful. And just, just continuing to, you know, communicate with people, you know, whether it's yeah, other clubs or, you know, just other baseball adjacent, you know, workforce. I think it's been, you know, really cool. Just there is a really cool community of people who love baseball and want to work in it for, you know, for their careers. And that's, you know, that's really awesome.
What was that first day like, Josh? I mean, you come into an internship and you walk in the door and okay, here you are. What's that first day like?
Well, I'm just a nervous Nelly, but at least for me, it was coming in and seeing like, all right, now I got to prove it, right? Like it was kind of coming in and thinking like, I've got to go solve baseball and show them that I deserve to be here. But I mean, the first day, it's kind of one of those where I, you know, being in the position of being a job seeker, you know, it's kind of as if getting into baseball is that pinnacle, right? Like you've climbed the mountain and you're in baseball and you feel good, but then you realize like, no, there's still work to do, right? Like now this is your job and you kind of have to just learn very quickly to not be starry eyed and get past it and understand like, okay, now you got a job to do. And so it was definitely one of those where, you know, not necessarily a rude awakening or anything, but just kind of understanding like your job's not done yet. You want to sit there and make sure that now, like you've been given this opportunity, try and do whatever you can to take advantage of it.
Essen, you have a really, really cool background when it comes to psychology and being able to mix everything with the quantitative part of it and also with the baseball side of it. How have you been able to explain sometimes the models that you've created to the on-field experience? How's that been able to translate?
I don't know if it's necessarily the psychology part that helps with that. And it's a challenge to communicate difficult models, complex models in a very simple way. I think it's something that we're always trying to get better at. Visualizations are an important way to communicate some of these complex models, but really I think what's important is being transparent about what the model can and can't do. You know, I think one of the most important things that you do with modeling is able to quantify uncertainty. You're able to put a numbers around uncertainty of outcomes. And because of that, you know, I think we need to be transparent with that uncertainty and not overemphasize, you know, the single point estimates and put a lot of faith into that, because I think that ends up doing a disservice, because if it's wrong, which it almost surely will be, then it looks bad. You start to lose the faith of the model. That's why that uncertainty is so important. But it's a challenge because you know, you explain uncertainty and it makes it sound like, okay, well, this isn't very good because you have all, you know, you're not giving me an exact estimate. So it's a challenge, it's a balance to try and figure out the best way to quantify and communicate that uncertainty while also being honest and open about what the model is doing. But most importantly, I think it is about transparency. You know, explain what the model's telling you or what the model can tell you and what it can't tell you.
Perfect. And for those of you that are watching, I just want to make sure that you guys continue to be engaged. I am also reading your questions on the Q&A. So continue using that while I continue asking questions, and I will incorporate as much as I can of those questions into the ones that we already have. And again, so far, brilliant. I love the mentorship question that I've asked all of you, because I also had Sig Meidahl when I was with the Astros in 2013, when it was in its infancy. And one of the things that was really difficult back then in 2013, and I would love to hear if it's Maggie or Josh or even Essa, and you guys can just jump in, is being able to translate that to the coaches so that they can use that to better and improve the players and see how open the players are to that, especially with the visuals. How do you communicate the visuals to the people on the field? Go ahead. I'm leaving it open to you guys.
I'll tackle this one, because that's a big component of my job. So it's kind of one of those, I mean, Essen hit on it very well, where you're trying to explain necessarily what information you can pull or what you can't. But I think it's also one of those too, where it's like, you're using the visuals to kind of give them direction on what to do. So it's kind of one thing to sit there and say, hey, if you do this, then you get that. But when the coach themselves goes to the player and tries to whatever, it's not necessarily, he can't just sit there and say, get more spin rate. Hey, better bat path. Like, it's got to be actionable for him. And so it's kind of sitting there and working with them and communicating. And then, you know, it's a back and forth. It's a two-way communication. It's definitely not one way. It's sitting there and saying, hey, we see this. If we change this, it'll help. And then sitting there and talking with the coach to understand, hey, how can we make this actionable for him?
Yeah, no, I'll just kind of piggyback on that too. I think so much of what we do is, you know, you're talking about visuals, and I think, you know, anything that we're trying to bring down to a player or coach, like having something to actually show it, whether it's right, whether it's, you know, some sort of a heat map or something that's, you know, well color coded. I think trying to make things as simple as possible, and I think again, like as understandable as possible, is, you know, so much of it. Like, you know, back to even the question of, you know, explaining models, it's like, so much of this job now is less so, you know, it's obviously building out the models, but, you know, the people who are going to actually utilize them are not going to understand them as well as, you know, the handful of people in your analytics department who built them. And so being able to disseminate that information to, you know, whether it's coaches or whether it's scouts or whomever it is, I think is becoming such a more important piece of it. And I think, yeah, a lot of that comes down to too, is just having really good communications and relationships that you build up with, you know, whether it's those coaches, and, you know, having it be pretty, you know, open and welcoming back and forth, where I think I'll say this too, that like, I've, you know, learned so much from coaches, where I think, you know, so often they're like, oh, you know, coaches will just say that we're the ones teaching them so much and bringing them all this new stuff. And I think that's, you know, yeah, that's definitely part of it, but you know, we're building our models and learning from them just as much as we are from, you know, they are from us. I think that's that really, you know, I think just so much of analytics is the, you know, combination of all different parts of the baseball operation department.
I think my two colleagues nailed it. The only thing I would add is that, and this is something that I picked up from, you know, my time when I was teaching, and that is, don't assume that people aren't asking questions because they don't have them. And that can be challenging, because, you know, you're constantly, you know, asking people if they have questions and you don't get any responses, but don't assume that just because you're not getting responses that they don't have questions.
Well, those three are excellent point. And, you know, I've had the honor of the last 4 years also of being able to be invited to actually MC and host and interview general managers and GM Chronicles for Major League Baseball and diversity, equity, and inclusion aspect of it during the winter meetings. And again, this is something that I take very personal to it. And I'm going to address the elephant in the room right now, because when we talk about representation right now, and these panelists, we have representation, you know, if it's from ethnicity, race, gender. Have you guys had to, sometimes when you guys get told no, because it's not an easy route for many of the listeners that we have and the viewers that we have to get to a position where you are, do you think that you have to try harder when you get rejected for something? Do you look at and see, well, maybe it was because of my gender? Is it my race? Is it my ethnicity that I was told no? And how many of us in the office are represented? And I'll go with Maggie first on this one.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. I think definitely, you know, when you're trying to get into the game, I think, you know, that's certainly in the back of your mind for sure, right? Like, is this part of the reason why, you know, why I'm not getting these jobs? But I think, you know, it's almost a bigger problem in that once you're at the point where you're, you know, looking for those jobs and you're, you know, talented enough and qualified, I think for the most part, I think Major League Baseball teams do a good job of, you know, wanting to bring those people in if they're, you know, qualified and such. I think it's more, you know, are we doing enough to, you know, help the people who are even younger seeing themselves being able to have this sort of a job, right? And I think that's something that's certainly getting better, right? I think, you know, recently it's like you're seeing, you know, more and more diverse people and forward facing jobs too, right? I think, you know, for the most part, I think analytics departments are probably becoming, you know, less just white guys. But I think now that we're seeing that, you know, more on field positions and, you know, things like GMs that are, you know, less of that, I think that really helps start to, you know, trickle down more. But I mean, I think, yeah, it's, you know, I'll say, like, with the Tigers, I've never really felt any, you know, any pushback to me being a woman. I think me having played softball in college helped kind of level the playing field in some ways. I think this happens to anyone when you first start, especially in an analyst department. It's like, you know, who is this person with, you know, with a computer and, you know, what do they know about baseball? And I think that happens regardless as to your, you know, whether your race or your gender. But I think it probably adds a little extra layer sometimes too when, you know, when you look a little less like the other people. But I think so much of that is building up those communications and, you know, those relationships with coaches and players and, you know, other front office employees. Yeah, I think, you know, it's something that, you know, Major League Baseball and realistically every organization still is needing to, you know, there's still more to do for sure. And I think, you know, things like, you know, the diversity program that Sabre does and Major League Baseball does, I think, you know, helps, you know, make those issues less and less, but, you know, that's not all it can take.
Essen, you wanna dive into that a little bit before I go into continue to ask questions about the employment aspect of it?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's an important thing that each organization focuses on bringing diversity, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it creates a better environment to work with and to work in. And, you know, having people with diverse backgrounds, that's going to bring so many more ideas, better ideas to the organization. It's going to take us so much further as an industry. And I mean, it's a no-brainer. So I think a lot of the strides that teams and MLB are making are good, but there's so much more that we can do and just got to continue to work at it.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, it's important on all fronts. And I think too, it's kind of one of those where, you know, it's important to try and, you know, carve a path for yourself. I think it's kind of one where you don't necessarily want to feel like you're fitting in all the time. I mean, it's definitely one where you're coming into a new culture and you might stand out, but that is a good thing. I mean, that diversity is important, and it's important to kind of bring that outside view and kind of be yourself and blaze that path, if you will. And more importantly, I think it's kind of one too, where as teams are bringing in new talent, but it's going to be, like as Maggie was saying too, it's going to be super helpful when you start to see people like you above you moving up. And then that kind of makes it so much more easy and ascertainable for people on the outside looking in to be like, hey, I can do that.
Essen, what skills are you looking for when hiring?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the position, but I touched on this earlier. We're always looking for people with some, you know, quantitative intuition. You know, you don't have to know how to model, build models, but being able to use data to make decisions is really important, pretty much no matter, you know, what role you're taking on. Also, I think there's, you know, this four C's of the 21st century skills: communication, collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking. I think those are excellent skills to have for any role that one undertakes in any industry. And, you know, those type of skills will get you pretty far in baseball.
Now, Maggie, when it comes to, you know, and I just asked him the what are they looking for, and he immediately said, you know, well, it depends on what department and everything. What really do analysts do? I mean, because in general, you know, we have college students that are saying, okay, what classes do I have to take? What courses do I have to take to be what you guys are looking for? What are those different departments within the major department of the analytical side of it?
Yeah, no, I think on a kind of overview level, like an analytics department, you know, a lot of the work that you're doing is, yeah, building out models. And, you know, I think to, you know, what I was saying earlier, so much of, you know, trying to figure out the uncertainty behind them. And, you know, I think we look at it as, yeah, we're building all these different models that will help, you know, help the rest of the baseball operations department make decisions. And, you know, within that, like, if you're looking at classes to take, it's, you know, we'll always say that, you know, take really learning like R or Python is really important. I think, you know, for the most part, it seems like most teams are happy with either. And, you know, I feel like I ask that question all the time, you know, do I need to learn both? What do I need to learn? What are the programming languages? And I think, you know, it's R or Python are the really important ones. And then, you know, some understanding with SQL is really important too, just because the, you know, the amount of data that a Major League Baseball team does have, there's, you know, so much of it. And so, you know, we're not able to, it's not like you're just, you know, pulling an Excel document and that's your spreadsheet. You know, there's so many different data sources that we're trying to kind of wrangle. And so, you know, within that, I think it's the most, you know, if you want to be, you know, definitely in an analytics department, it's taking statistics classes, you know, trying to learn some machine learning, you know, some, I think there's also a piece of it too, of, you know, taking some economics classes, I feel like has been pretty useful and is pretty solid base that a lot of analysts have. But I think on the other hand, you know, taking classes outside of that is really important too. I think, you know, as much as you have, you know, being able to be the best modeler, best, you know, data analyst, I think is really useful, but having, you know, having a background in things like psychology or something that's a little, I think, outside of just exactly, you know, these are these 10 classes I have to take to be, you know, a data scientist. I think there's having a, it's always really useful to have a little bit more, you know, what else do you bring besides for just your ability to code? And, you know, maybe it's the way you think about it, because, yeah, you know, you've taken some, you know, psychology classes or some, you know, some physics classes, I think. So I think there's the classes that you can take can be pretty wide, but yeah, on a, you know, general level, taking a lot of, you know, analytic classes is definitely useful.
Is there a misconception out there about I have to go to an Ivy League school? I know one, I know, for example, you know, Maggie, you went to University of Chicago, Essen, you went to University of Illinois, and Josh, you went to Duke. Is there a misconception of I need to pad my, if it's, you know, my resume as far as education, because if I did not go there, how else can I be able to impress in that one shot that I may have to do to land a job in a major league team, or if it's with Info Solutions or another analytical data team?
I think in the past that was the case. But I think what we're seeing now is that kind of as Essen hit, like one of the best things you can do is have documented work yourself, right? So it's kind of cool, you know, when you have a big name on your degree, it does help you kind of like stand out a little bit from the pack. But I mean, if you're able to kind of show that you can do the work and do it with quality, I mean, that basically neutralizes it, right? You clearly learned what you needed to learn and made it, you know, useful. So I think it's kind of one of those things where that you shouldn't let that kind of intimidate you. And I think that's been one of the big things when we talk about diversity. I mean, part of it is background, where you're coming from. The big names that were in the talent pools that we heard about kind of intimidated people from not jumping in. But no, I mean, if you have the ability and you can demonstrate it when you're applying, like you're right there on path with everyone else.
Essen, and again, I saw this question, and the questions continue to come in a major way. And again, as I'm listening, I'm also reading, and my wife says that I'm an improved multitasker since Zoom really entered our lives. And RJ asked this question a few minutes ago, and I would love to ask you this question. Is, as someone in charge of innovation within the organization, how do you solicit ideas internally and externally? And what areas do you find the most fruitful, example, in-game development, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that, because this department is brand new, that we're trying to figure out. I think we've talked about this a little bit already, but communication is really what's going to drive the success of that. So that means communication, not just within members of the organization, but also outside the organization. So looking for other industries that are innovating and what innovations exist outside of baseball, or whether it's in sports or outside of the sports industry entirely. So communication is really probably the biggest tool that is going to help drive the success of this department. So being able to learn from the other members of our organization and being able to learn from people outside the organization.
That's excellent. The way to answer, because I was curious to see also about that answer. And you answered actually my question to that, but Maggie, I'll go to you in this one. Do I have to know and be knowledgeable when it comes to programs in order, would it really help me if it's Python, if it's SQL?
I think if you want to be, you know, an analyst, those are definitely crucial things to know. And I think more and more are starting to see just general baseball operations, you know, job postings kind of say like, it'd be a, you know, a plus if you have some understanding of, you know, Python or SQL. Just I think as, you know, as analyst departments and baseball operations departments grow and, you know, there is more and more sort of data and analytics, I think having more people who can, you know, do something basic on their own, or, you know, be able to just, you know, pull the data from yesterday's game, I think is becoming more useful. And I think a lot of it too is just the way it feels like it's the way that the world is going, is that, you know, there's just more data being utilized everywhere. And, you know, even if you're not in a data centric position, having some understanding of it is useful, because even if you're not the one doing the analytics, you might be, you know, maybe in more of a conduit role where it is really useful for you to understand, you know, what the analytics department is doing and how that model is built, and then be able to, you know, kind of be able to explain that to, you know, whether it's a coach or, you know, a scout, I think a little bit more. So I think, yeah, sometimes having, even if you're thinking you're, you know, want to be in just a baseball operations, you know, employee outside of an analyst department, I think it can't hurt to, you know, take a class on, you know, on one of those things and get at least some understanding of it for sure.
Josh, I've been a part of the alternative, games on ESPN, doing the StatCast games, as we call it. And it's an honor for me to be able to do that and be alongside so many interesting and really cool people. But then again, you know, I grew up watching and playing the game old school way. For those scouts, and this is why I'm going to you with this because of the background, for those scouts that are, let's say, in their 40s or even 50s, and they have really good communication skills, they want to continue to improve. How do they go about it to be able to obviously have an open mind, but to blend both sides of the information, the analytical information, with the on-field information? Is it frowned upon when it comes to organizations? And if it's not, how do they get their foot in back in to the new way that the game is being evaluated?
Yeah, I mean, well, number one, let me say those games are the best. I love the StatCast games. I eat those up. But for the question, it's one for the scouts. Like, you know, like the game is evolving, and so we're kind of asking the scouts to evolve. You know, every organization is different, but, you know, I think it's kind of one of those where we see that, like, you know, at the end of the day, we know models don't account for everything. We know they're not perfect, right? And so there is a place for scouts. There is something to be said of having that in-person, in-human understanding of what's going on to add some context from time to time. And that's super valuable. Like, that's just something we can't infer. So in terms of, like, kind of incorporating our scouts into it, I mean, a big part of it is just kind of getting them to understand what can and can't be measured. And then so that way they can understand what's important for them to actually be looking for. You know, stuff when you're sitting there and you're kind of going, you know, I feel like he swings and misses a lot. Well, we can answer that, right? Like, we have those numbers, we can dive in. We can do that with a bunch of different measurables, but it's kind of one of those where it's like, it seems like he gets down on himself after, you know, two bad at bats. Like, it's a little bit harder for us to really kind of get into that. And so there's useful information there. And then, you know, we try and figure out ways if we can, or if we can't blend it, but we at least hold on to it to see if there's something we can do with it in the future. So in terms for scouts, I mean, you know, a lot of teams are trying to train the scouts. Scouts are valuable, so we're trying to sit there and make sure that they have it. But I think also, too, just kind of going and getting yourself familiar with some of the tools that teams are using to go through and access this information, even just kind of getting real good at Baseball Savant, is a way to kind of just like really get your bearings so that you can understand kind of like, hey, what are the numbers answering? And then what extra additional value can I bring on top?
Yeah, by the way, I'm the one that educates Mike Petriello in those StatCast games, by the way. I give him all the numbers. I let him know all the theories behind everything. But it's a great educational part of it, and we will continue to do that during the year. We already have a couple games set during the regular season and obviously the wild card as well. So that's a plug for me on that one. But Essen, one thing that Josh did say is that the game continues to evolve. We've always known that. But now more than ever, we're seeing new rules now being implemented at the minor league level that most likely it might reach the major league level sooner than what we think. One of them is obviously with the shift. And let's say, for example, it does get to the major league level with the shift. What comes next? You lead the innovation part of it. I mean, because I remember being in Houston with Sigma Idol, and we were out in the field at 9 o'clock in the morning, marking up everywhere so we can put it into the ground control, into the data. Are you guys already attacking that, or are you waiting to see first before it gets to the major league level?
Yeah, I mean, let's just pretend I know the answer to that question. I'm not going to say it here, but you know, the player tracking data and technology that is now available, this helps immensely for things like this. I mean, we now know where guys are positioned, and you just have to adapt. You have to adapt to what the rules state and within those rules. And you know, you could still, if you can't put the guy out in the outfield, well, you could still shift the fielders around in the infield. So we'll learn from the data. We'll learn what the best positioning is based off what we see with the ball tracking and whatnot. And we'll make sure we get the most out of our guys and our defense.
All right. And I'm not trying to get any proprietary stuff out of any of you guys, but I am going to ask, and again, this is something that I think a lot of the listeners want to know. And for example, Maggie, if you, and I know that, you know, reading your bio and going back and seeing what you did in college, as far as getting your foot in the door, looking at what the catcher was doing, setting up and all that stuff, what are some of the things that you tackle on your job going in on a daily basis? What are some of those examples?
Yeah, I'd say like specifically right now, a lot of my work is, more on the player development sphere. So it's a lot of kind of research on terms of, you know, I think the big boom in, you know, in the player development sphere recently has been just an immense amount of new technology. So there's, you know, all of our players, you know, have blast sensors, bat sensors on their bats. You know, feels like every time anyone throws or catches a ball, it's, you know, being tracked by something. You know, I think a lot of teams now have, you know, some sort of a smart cage, at least that's what we call ours, which has, you know, all of our, as like force plates in the mounds and force plates in the batter's box. And, you know, we can kind of utilize those. I think that's been a lot of our push is like, okay, yeah, there's all this new, you know, pitch design has become a bigger and broader common term. And so, okay, how do we actually, you know, utilize that and put that into play? And we can, you know, show this guy his, you know, the immediate tracking information of it right afterwards. And now it's, okay, what do we want to actually do with that? You know, and a lot of that comes down to working really hard with the coaches to figure out, right, what do we, you know, I can maybe say like, hey, yeah, it'd be like, I think, you know, Josh kind of said this one point earlier, it's like, it'd be really great if you had, you know, more spin on your pitch, but like, how do we actually get that? How do we do that? It's not, you know, it can be sometimes easy when you're just sitting at a computer and it's like, oh, well, yeah, if this guy could just do this, he'd be a major leaguer tomorrow. Right. But, you know, they're not just, you know, baseball players are not just something, they're not just data. They're, you know, they're humans, and there's so much there, right? And so, you know, even it's like, yeah, maybe change this grip on your pitch a little and throw that. It's like, well, that works. It's like, yeah, but that felt awful. And it feels like it's, you know, I'm never going to be able to repeat that. It's like, okay, great, let's try something else. And so I think there's, you know, there's so much of it of let's try something and then see how it kind of goes. And it's a lot of kind of doing more of that research side of stuff.
Okay, great. But now take me in there, and I'm going to stick with you, Maggie, on this one. You see something, let's say on a pitcher at the minor league level, you see the data, you get that aha, it's right there in the system. Where do you go with that information? Who do you go to next? And how does that get to the field for that player to put it into action?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the times, I mean, I know for us, we've started really, really honing in on like player plans with our minor league players. And so working a lot with our coaches and our, the heads of like, so, you know, I work a lot with like our director of pitching. And so if there's something, there's something with some pitcher who I'm seeing, it's, maybe I'd go to him or whoever the pitching coach is that's at, going to be, his coach that year, just say like, hey, I'm seeing this, maybe I'd give him a quick call and say, hey, I'm seeing this. I think, maybe there's something here. What have you guys been trying? What is he thinking about? What is he working on? Because I think a lot of times if I'm seeing something, there's a good chance that they're thinking it too, right? It's like, I feel like it's one of those things where, things don't stay too secret in baseball for very long, right? Recently, it's, everyone's throwing fastballs up in the zone. And so, maybe it's something I'm seeing like that. Like this guy is, throwing his fastball low and away too much. And he has a good, high spin rate pitch and should really be throwing it up in the zone. And, I might call him and say like, hey, we should be doing this. Like, we're working on it too. But of course, it's not something that just happens overnight because, again, that's not quite how it works. But yeah, I think that comes back down to a lot of just communication with the coaches. I think for the most part, I'll never go straight to a player to say something. It's always like, let's see what the coaches are working on. And then, again, even though I played softball and, there's some background there. I'm never going to go to a player and say like, hey, just, change this grip on your pitch and throw that. It's like, no, I mean, I'm going to communicate with the coach and then maybe the two of us will go talk to him together or, we'll kind of, it'll be a team effort at that point, but usually it's, I'll go talk to the coach and then the coach will go talk to a player and then, it kind of forces its way back up.
And go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, just to piggyback on that, like that's a huge thing where it's, you're working with the coaches because the coaches are the coaches, right? They're the ones who are going to interact with the players. I think it's kind of one where you get good buy-in with the coaches if you're doing that, but you also understand that you get good buy-in with the players when you empower the coaches and then make sure that they're talking to specialists instead of it sounding like us dictating to them what they do.
Listen, I remember back a few years ago, and again, I'm going to go to the 2013 when I was a bench coach for the Houston Astros. It was, even though, they started building that analytical team and obviously Sigma Idol was a big part of it. And it's grown substantially through the years and you have experience with the Dodgers before the Astros. Does it continue to grow those analytical teams per organization? I'm going to use your experience because I know, for example, with the Dodgers, they took over the visiting clubhouse and they had to build another clubhouse. I've seen it. I walked through there. I try to sneak in, but they always block me out of there. How big are these analytical teams growing and will it continue to grow?
Yeah, those are some good memories back in that old visiting clubhouse. It's not as cool as it sounds.
Lockers are still there.
The lockers are still there. Yep. That was my little, my desk space was in the locker. I started with the Dodgers in 2015, when Andrew Friedman took over the organization and there was no R&D team before that. We had an analyst there prior to Doug and Andrew taking over, but there was no official R&D department. And, Doug built that team up from eight that first year to about 20 by the time I left. So in four seasons, it had gone from one to 20. And here in Houston, we have a really good team. And so R&D is not just analysts. I want to make sure that, the developers are a huge part of what we do. And as cool as models that are being built in R&D, they would be not very cool without some developer help backing them up. So R&Ds typically consist of analysts and developers. And in our group that we have here in Houston, we're always trying to grow it as much as we are allowed to grow it. I mean, the more typically the better, and to get more brain power in there and to help us build these models that we want to build and these web applications that we want to build, we're going to need more brain power. And one thing that Maggie touched on earlier that I thought was really important is you know, getting a breadth of knowledge, you know, having a range of knowledge. So this is something that I have thought about a lot when hiring is, you know, how much should I value expertise in a particular area versus, you know, more broad knowledge. And I think there's value to both, but having expertise, as valuable as that is, if you don't have a lot of supporting people around you, that expertise is not really going to get much use out of it. So it's important to have, again, talking about diversity of knowledge, diversity of backgrounds here, so that we can have a team that can build, you know, the best stuff, the best models, the best programs for communication. So if it was up to me, we'd have a team of 20 to 30, but you know, we have to work within our constraints here. I think it's going to be constantly evolving, and you know, as technology grows, you know, we have analysts on the field now. I mean, that's the state of where the game is.
Have you guys found any resistance sometimes to ideas that you guys have had or brought to the table, saying, how do I get this across? It's so clear. It's right there. I've got the data, yet the organization just doesn't want to look at it the same way. And how do you go about selling that idea?
Yeah, I mean, that can be challenging at times, but I think we here in Houston, we have really a lot of buy-in from the top down, you know? So a lot of our players know the analytics, they're familiar with it, they're growing up with it now. As I mentioned before, like numeracy is just such an important skill to have in today's world, and data is everywhere. So this type of thinking, this type of ideas are not that strange anymore. And I think it's become a lot easier to push some maybe unorthodox ideas from what the data are telling us to players that we wouldn't have been able to do maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, look at the shift now. Everyone's doing the shift. Everyone buys into the shift. I think that's a good example of the buy-in that we've seen now.
Yeah, it's sort of like the electric slide. Everybody knows how to do it, yet when to do it is the big question, when to put it in there. Maggie, and I got a question, actually. It's by one of the people that I respect the most in the game, and one of my colleagues, Sarah Langs, as a matter of fact. When she's the one that makes me look pretty darn smart when it comes to games, and she would love to know what support you have felt as a woman in baseball.
Yeah, no, hi, Sarah, love to hear from you. I'd say, you know, one of the cool things, I think, especially this year, without just in everything going more, you know, more Zoom focused and such, I think there's really a pretty strong group of women working, you know, specifically for baseball teams. We have a Slack group going that has, you know, basically probably not all of them, but a good amount of the women who work for different baseball operations department. And, you know, there's a lot of just, you know, communicating, and sometimes it's just kind of venting or, you know, talking about some issues, and, you know, we'll have a monthly Zoom call. And I think that's one of those things where it really helps when you can sometimes feel like you're on an island being a woman and, you know, in a baseball operations department and not seeing many other ones, you know, when you kind of are on the backfield and it's just you and a bunch of guys. But I think recognizing that you're never on an island, there's, you know, a handful of them in every team. And so then you have resources, you have people to rely on. And I think, you know, I think there's, even when you think about, yeah, more than just people who actually work for a team, there are plenty of women who work, you know, in, you know, whether it's, yeah, like Sarah, who's, I think, yeah, I mean, very out there. And I think there's, you know, plenty of women who are working on more of the media side of things. So I think, yeah, the women in baseball really support each other. And that's been really cool to see. And I think, you know, we're working really hard to try and find, you know, give more resources to women who are looking to try and get into the game. Like I always say that, you know, my email is always open to anyone who, you know, anyone who's looking to try to get into the game or just has, you know, questions, whether it's about, yeah, what, you know, what classes should I take to, you know, do this, or maybe it's, yeah, how have your experiences been? Is there, you know, any, have you ever had any issues? I think, being as transparent as I can about that, I think has always been really useful. And I think, yeah, mostly just knowing that there really is such a wonderful group of women who work, whether it's within the game or, adjacent to the game, I think is, really, really awesome to kind of build on.
We're coming down the stretch, man. Time is flying and I'm looking at the watch going, are you kidding me? I thought I was just getting started here, but I need to ask you guys and each one of you, and I'll start with us and then Josh, and then I'll finish up with you, Maggie. Let's say I'm an aspiring college graduate, just got my bachelor's. I want to get into the game. Essen, give me your advice. I need some help here. I need your knowledge. I need your experience. What can you tell me that I need to do to be able to get my foot in the door?
I get people who reach out on like LinkedIn, for instance, ask a similar question. And I think one, reaching out to people on teams and asking them questions is a good way to do it. You get your face out there. They know who you are now. I will touch on this before, but I'll say it again, like demonstrating some work that you've done to answer a baseball question, I think is really going to give you a leg up. And again, it doesn't have to be baseball, but if it's, if it's an analyst position, it necessarily doesn't have to be baseball. But if it's, for instance, if you're looking at a scouting role, have some demonstrated work writing scouting reports. I think that's going to help a lot. And then just look for as many positions as you can find. I mean, teamwork is a good source for positions, but apply to as many as you can. And again, like show that demonstrated work and hopefully it works out. But I encourage people to reach out, at least to me. I'm happy to talk to people offline and give some advice specific to the type of job that they're interested in. But really it's finding the area and passion of baseball that you're really interested in and focusing on that.
Josh?
Well, you took mine, so let's think of one on the fly. I mean, yeah, like definitely reaching out and networking. It's actually not really a big industry. If you think about it, it's just a 30 team. So it's anything that you can do to stand out is super helpful. But I would say, I think the thing that I would point out then is persistence. And I would say that on the front that you're going to probably apply to a lot of jobs and you might not get a bunch of them. You might not get any of them for a few years. And that's not to say that you're not close. It's not to say that you're whatever. I mean, not to be too daunting, but it's a really big pool of applicants that are coming through. And so, timing is something that plays into it. I think the best thing that you can do is if you really do want to work in this, be patient, persistent, apply to job, expand your horizons in terms of jobs that you're considering. Like we kind of hit it up at the top, but there's a lot of jobs where, just that experience and that exposure is something that's helpful. It might not be directly what you want, but it can at least get your foot in the door. So that's pretty helpful. I think I'll embarrass myself and say I spent 3 years and I think I applied to about 20, 25, maybe 30 different positions before I finally got one. Yes. So it's a bit of a battle. You just got to keep your confidence if you want to do it and just keep going for it.
Maggie.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely echo, everything that both of you said. I think the only really thing I'll add to that is, again, trying to really find like what your niche is within the game, right? I think, back to what we've been saying is, having some example of you actually doing it is really useful because, again, so many people would just say like, yeah, I love baseball. I would love to work in baseball. And then, okay, well, what do you actually want to do? And it's just like, oh, I don't know. I just love baseball. It's like, okay. That great place to start, but like figuring out what it is that what you actually bring to a team and what kind of piece finding a project that really interests you or just there's so much out there now too. There's so much public research, and so even just trying to replicate something that someone else did I think is really useful. I mean, not only for us to see that you're interested in it, but also gives you a chance to see like, is this what I actually want to do? I think it's so easy to not know and then, actually start to do it and like, oh, maybe this isn't for me or maybe this is really, really what drives me. And, that's awesome. And so I think, yeah, finding time to anytime you have a project or, I know when I was like taking SAS classes or anytime I could just pick any sort of data, it's like pick something in baseball. I think that really helps just in terms of that now you have, it works for you in terms of, do I like this? And it also works as a great, a great piece on your resume when you're sending stuff in to say, hey, look, here's this project I did on, you know, on baseball, whatever. So I think, but, and yeah, I'll say definitely, you know, always feel free to reach out. I think it can feel daunting to, you know, email or LinkedIn request someone who, you know, especially people who maybe have, yeah, a senior title or something, but, you know that no one's going to sit there and say like, oh, here's this annoying kid who just won't stop reaching out. It's like, all it's going to do is it's going to put your name out there. You know, we'll recognize it. And realistically, I mean, for the most part, everyone I've ever talked to has always been super willing to, you know, send you a quick email back or, you know, schedule a time to get on a quick call. And I think that's, you know, always really useful.
Well, even in this crazy world of Zoom that we've had to live for the past year, as a matter of fact, we're looking at a year ago today was the last time I set foot in a major league complex. You went to the University of Chicago. The mascot is Phil the Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken, a mythical bird that was reborn from its own ashes. So hopefully we will get fans again at full capacity in stadiums before the year is over. The Fighting Illini and the Duke Blue Devil, again, having a representation here from an underrepresented group in the game is, to me, an honor. And I appreciate every minute that you guys have been able to give us here during this panel. And again, I respect everything you guys do. And thank you so much on behalf of Sabre and on behalf of Major League Baseball and the organization. Scott, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to create a relationship with Maggie, Josh, and Essen as we move forward. So thank you so much. Scott, I leave it in your hands. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you so much, Eduardo. And thanks again to Essen, Josh, and Maggie for joining us today. I'm with you, Eduardo. That could have been a much longer conversation, but we covered so much ground and a lot of valuable information from all of our panelists. So thank you. And thanks to the folks who joined us on Facebook Live for this panel as well. We'll be saying goodbye to you here shortly. But if you liked it, hopefully you'll come and see the whole conference next year.